tape 11, scrapbook 7, page 14 and 15. There are articles concerning police policy on legal costs for an officer. In the past, city attorney's office has represented all police officers, and there was some question about a patrolman daily and an arrest he made, and these articles were concerning that. But the police came out on top and won city help on legal costs. On page 16 in scrapbook 7, there's a couple pictures of police dental Faye Salt on her retirement and the presentation of a gift. She was an excellent police stenographer and had served in World War II as a WAC, and she was well liked in the department and lived for many, many years in northeast Minneapolis, not too far from where I lived. She was an excellent employee. At the bottom there's a picture of myself and Jerry Snell on board probably Kurt Carlson's boat on one of the trips on the St. Croix that he gave each year. Jerry Snell was a former assistant county attorney in Hennepin County, an excellent attorney, and later went out to Anoka County and did a lot of good work out there as a assistant county attorney. Page 17, scrapbook 7, a couple funeral notices, one for my uncle Walter Larson, who passed away. He was involved in an automobile accident. And retired Detective Lawrence Findorf, who served in the Detective Bureau when I was there, and later on as a desk man in the forgery division. He had a severe case of arthritis, and so he was taken care of by putting him on a desk job inside. He was an excellent detective, and he later on had a son who joined the police department, who also was an excellent officer. On page 19, scrapbook 7, a picture of Bill Noble and myself presenting a check to a winner of an essay contest that the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association sponsored each year and gave scholarship money to the winners of the contest. I don't remember the girl's name, but she was the state winner of this contest. On page 20 in scrapbook 7, there's a picture of Detective John Meehan and Federation President Charles Stenvig and myself presenting the retirement badge to John Meehan. John Meehan was an excellent detective on the department for many, many years. His father at one time was chief of police in Minneapolis, and he also had a brother, Robert, a detective in the police department, who was on the department also. Page 21, there is a picture of a Reverend Robert A. Featherstone and Reverend Ellis Eckloff, pastor emeritus. They were pastors at Bethlehem Baptist Church, where I made a few remarks on a Sunday during their worship service, a Sunday devoted and on the theme of law enforcement and what the Bible had to say about it. An interesting appearance, and I met Reverend Featherstone many times after that appearance, and he was a very prominent in that religion, and later on was a professor in their seminary over in St. Paul. Book 7, pages 22 and 23, 24 and 25 were pictures of Inspector Dwyer, Detective Inspector Wayne Sherman, and myself. And this was getting towards the end of my tenure in the Minneapolis Police Department. I don't know why these particular pictures were taken, but it was at about that time in my career. Book 7, page 26, there's a group of letters that the department and I received commenting about the type of job that the department was doing, and like the Aquitennial Parade and other letters commenting about law enforcement generally and praising the department. Was nice to get this type of communication from citizens and others. As we received complaints, and this helped balance it off, and gave us a feeling of satisfaction. And I think anybody working in any position where you're dealing with the public all the time, and in a fairly sensitive position, needs to be told and receive honest letters about the kind of job you're doing. In scrapbook 7, starting on page 27, there is a articles about rumors of my resignation and going out to Plymouth to accept the police chief's job in Plymouth. Prior months, probably as long as a year, 6 months, I had been thinking about making a change. I was getting very tired and tired of and filled up with all the political problems and bickering in the city of Minneapolis. By the very fact that I was appointed by Mayor Nathlin, I was immediately put in the center between Mayor Nafflin and the city council and some of the councilmen on the council who were vying with Nafflin for various political positions, and their philosophy was different than Mayor Nafflin's also. I had gradually come to the conclusion that I didn't want to face that constant political bickering, and then I felt that I was faced with some disloyalty close to me in the police department itself, and that my health, and though I hadn't had any indications of any bad health, was better for me that I would get out from all that tension and all that bickering and the political nonsense that was going on in the city, well, for a number of years, but particularly bad in the last year or two. And when I heard that they were accepting applications out of Plymouth, I put mine in, not being real serious about it, but trying to see what they would offer in the way of salary and other benefits, plus what kind of people I would be dealing with out in Plymouth. My application apparently had leaked out somehow. I had never said anything about it. In fact, I wrote the application out in longhand so that I wouldn't use any typist or secretary in the department to type it out. And but it leaked out anyway, and there were rumors that I was supposedly in the running for for Plymouth Police Chief, and that I was leaving the department, and I think some of the men who were interested in succeeding me and becoming chief probably pushed it along a little bit also. But actually, I was sold on going out to Plymouth by Mayor Al Hilde. We met one time for lunch, and he took me in his car and gave me a tour of the city and showed me where everything was and what was going on and his plans for the future. I was very impressed with him. He was as sincere and conscientious as I had ever seen in any politician. And actually, he wasn't a politician. He was a businessman, and he he was dedicated and honest and conscientious, almost overly so. As far as conscientiousness went, to be a politician, be able to say no once in a while. I talked the situation over with my wife Marion, and we went out there and took a drive through the city, and she wasn't real impressed because she thought it was quite rural out there, and many parts of the village were. But I had pretty much decided that I would accept the position and go out there. I met with the city attorney Herbert Leffler, the city administrator Gerald Splinter, and with Mayor Al Hilde at one of the restaurants out in Plymouth along Highway 12 out there, and talked about the situation, and then signed an acceptance that I was accepting the job, and that my acceptance would go to the village council at the next meeting, and I would be hired as of December 2nd, 1968. The Plymouth Police Department was a small department. It consisted of 9 people, including myself, plus a stenographer. And it was housed, the police headquarters was in a house trailer, which was parked alongside the city hall at the corner, the northeast corner of Highway 55 and what is now 94. Anyway, the freeway running north and south that crosses Highway 55. The city had 3 or 4 squad cars, and they all worked alone in a squad, and they received their calls through the sheriff's radio station, Hennepin County Sheriff's radio station, who dispatched a lot of the suburban police departments. Along with being police chief, I was also appointed civil defense director for Plymouth, something new for me, but I later enjoyed associations and the training that I received in order to do that job. Scrapbook 7 on page 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, and 34 are newspaper clippings, letters, cards, and what have you, thanking me for my for my tenure as chief, and thanking for me for the job that I had done for the city. Also, on page 26 are a couple letters concerning job the department did at the Aquitennial Parade. Mostly people who are concerned with possible chances for disturbances, riots, and what have you the night of the parade. I heard from judges, the mayor, relatives, friends, other people in law enforcement that I had known over the years, writing to me, thanking me for the job I did, and also wishing me the best for my future endeavors out at the Plymouth Police Department. It was pleasing to me to see who responded, and though I had kind of mixed feelings about leaving, I knew it was the best for me because of all the political bickering and what have you that was going on at the, over a period of time before I left. Scrapbook 7, starting at page 37, there are some press clippings about Donald Dwyer's appointment to superintendent of police to succeed me in Minneapolis, and some articles about his family and some of his ideas on what he might want to do to start his administration of the department. On page 40, there's some article, an article concerning the luncheon, the civic luncheon honoring me on my retirement. It was at the Radisson Hotel. It was a very, very pleasing and very flattering turnout, and they presented me with numerous plaques and citations thanking me for my service to the city, and also in a more concrete way, you might say, they presented me with a large television set also, which I made very good use of. On pages 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49 are more letters congratulating me on my new position in Plymouth and thanking me for my service to the city as chief of police in Minneapolis. It was a very pleasing showing and very flattering to receive all these letters from various people, friends, political figures, and what have you. Seven, on page 49 is the start of clippings and letters and other info on my start in Plymouth Police Department. On page 50 and 51 is a certificate and a letter concerning my being awarded the Good Neighbor Award from WCCO Radio. Then on page 52, a letter and article in some magazine concerning my appearance at Bethlehem Baptist Church, and also a letter from one of my classmates on page 53 in the FBI Academy, who had seen the article in that magazine. Also on 53, it's an article concerning the start of training, in-service training to begin in Plymouth PD. This is one of the things that I was very interested in Plymouth because it gave me a chance putting my imprint on the department and training it the way I wanted it trained, so that good service would be rendered to the citizens of Plymouth. I had, of course, been training director in Minneapolis at one time, and I had a lot of interest in training, and I thought that that would be the salvation of the police profession. The better educated and trained we were, the better job we could do, and the better service we could render, and perhaps even reduce the amount of crime drastically, or even almost eliminate it. Page 54 and 55, there are some articles about my goals out in Plymouth, and then Don Dwyer's appointment of people to in the positions under the chief of police, the appointed positions in the Minneapolis Police Department. On page 56, there's a copy of my application for chief in Plymouth. This is the one I said I wrote out in longhand because I didn't want it to leak out by the use of having a typist type it or a secretary to do it up. And it's a little rough and not very business-like looking, but it was received out there, and I became chief, so I guess it was acceptable. And in scrapbook 7, page 57, 58, and some of the following pages are newspaper articles concerning the police situation in Plymouth before I arrived out there. They had had a series of incidents and so-called scandals during which the former chief in Plymouth, Claude Lean, had been fired or resigned, and a detective, Bruce Johnson, had been fired also. These articles tell of some of this situation. Apparently, at one time, even that the councilman's office was bugged by someone, supposedly by members of the police department, during their fight with the council. At this time, I think it's a good place for me to tell why I enjoyed coming out to Plymouth and my early impressions of the city of Plymouth and its department. I drove back and forth. I stayed in living in Minneapolis at my address at 3440 Stinson Boulevard Northeast, where I had lived since 1950, and I continued to live there during my whole career out in Plymouth, which meant that I had a fairly long commute each day. One salvation was that I was going out of the city and most of the cars were coming in, and I was going with the sun, having it at my back on both the mornings going out and the evenings coming in. So that made for a good situation. Also out in Plymouth, after I was established and for most of my career out there, I, in the warm months of the year, I would carry an apple perhaps and a little cheese or something very light for my lunch, and I'd eat that just before lunchtime, and then I'd go down the road to Felder's driving range and later on out at Highway 101 and 55, another golf driving range, where I'd hit balls for a half hour or 45 minutes each lunch hour. And I think this This is Scrapbook 7, Side B, page 57 and beyond. Continuing my comments and thoughts of my first years in Plymouth, I was talking about hitting balls at noon after eating a lunch at my desk. I think this helped me very much with relaxing me and relieving any tension, though there wasn't very much out of Plymouth. In fact, none really. It was a lot like being on pension. The problems in Plymouth were small. The apartment was small. Any problems that would come up, I had been through many, many times down in Minneapolis during my career, and it made it very easy to administer the department and to conduct training and do all the things necessary to being police chief in Plymouth. I made it a point to do as many speeches and get out in the community as much as possible in order to get acquainted with the citizens and the leaders of various organizations in Plymouth and the citizens themselves who attended these meetings. And I was used to doing this, and it was very easy, and I enjoyed it very much. I was very careful as to what organization I joined out in Plymouth. As I had invitations from most of the service clubs out there, but each service club usually had some kind of a project or some kind of a thing that they did each year, which meant a lot of time for the membership to do the various things that they were doing in their organization. So I decided the best thing for me was to join the Chamber of Commerce, where I felt that I would be in close contact with most of the businessmen of the community, and that I wouldn't be called upon to devote a lot of time to their projects, because I wanted to devote as much time as I could to the department and its training of its officers, and in order to improve it as fast as possible. Age 60 and 61, there's a certificate citing my completion of a civil defense course, and I attended several of these in my early years in Plymouth, as one of my duties was being civil defense director, and I wanted to get up to speed as much as possible on the various ins and outs and duties of being a civil defense director. And I took it as a real responsibility and a thing that I should do, and get as well trained as I could as soon as possible. On page 63 in scrapbook 7, there is a group picture of a rookie training class put on by the Hennepin County Chiefs of Police Association. And I had one candidate in the school, Tom Saba, who was a young, intelligent, clean-cut appearing, gifted, young officer who took his rookie training at this class. He later became an investigator for the Plymouth Police Department and a sergeant, and he continues in the department to this day. An excellent officer. On page 64, there's a little item that appeared in the local paper about the Plymouth Police Department acquiring a projector. This was a sight sound film strip projector that projects and gives lectures on the various subjects, and these films were put out by the International Association of Chiefs of Police, and we had a number of them, and continued to add to the number of films as time went on. In the Plymouth Police Department, it was impossible to do roll call training because there was only one or two or three officers appearing per shift. So what the officers could do was just come in and look at this projector and press a button and receive a 5-minute brief training on various subjects and a reminder for some of the more veteran officers, and for the younger officers a chance to improve their knowledge of police work. I think this was a very good program, and it continued at least till I left there, and I'm sure for a while after that, until new materials and new programs evolved, giving a better way of training officers in small groups. Also on page 64, there is a clipping stating that I was upheld in my suspension of Gene Wilson, and it stated I did not violate the state veterans preference law when I suspended Eugene Wilson back in my Minneapolis days. So that turned out that I was right, and the courts backed me up. On page 65 is a article from the local Plymouth paper concerning some new equipment. We purchased radar sets and had a training session on them in which all of the Plymouth police employees were trained in the use of radar so that they could do speed enforcement on the various highways. Out in Plymouth, a big problem was the traffic problem, accidents, and that sort of thing. And so I put a lot of emphasis on training and traffic enforcement because I think this is where the Plymouth Police Department could be very effective in preventing the loss of life and property and due to traffic accidents. And over the years, the Plymouth Police Department gained a reputation for being one of the top departments in the state for its traffic enforcement program and for the amount of enforcement and tags issued in the Plymouth community. On page 67, there's a small clipping concerning the sighting of Sergeant Mel Solberg and Patrolman Matt Solovskoy for efficiency and courage in handling an aggravated robbery in the city on September 1st. I made it a policy to issue commendations whenever possible and in every case where outstanding ability, efficiency, courage, and know-how resulted in good arrests. I think this is important in a police department, particularly a small one, to see that men are rewarded for good work. On page 68, there is a articles concerning the mayoralty campaign going on in Minneapolis in the spring after I got out to Plymouth. And this concerned Charlie Stenvig running for mayor and his opponent being Dan Cohen, former councilman and pain in my rear portion when I was chief in Minneapolis. One of the controversial things that came up, and it probably had important part in the defeat of Cohen, was that that Dan Cohen accused Stenvig of leading or having the police federation parade without a parade permit. I knew about this because Elmer Nordlund, who was secretary of the police federation, came in and wanted a permit. And I gave him one, I didn't have my secretary type it, and went back to the Bureau of Records where there was a stenographer who I trusted implicitly and had her type the permit up, and I gave this to Nordlund to have during this parade or protest. The men were marching for improved conditions and wages and what have you. So I knew there was a permit issued. And Dan Cohen had Don Dwyer hunt through all the files, and they couldn't find any permit because there was none in there. I had issued it to Nordland myself when I was superintendent of police, and so he had one. And then it was later shown that he did have one, and Cohen, of course, accusing him of lacking a permit on this controversial question. And I think it contributed to the defeat of Dan Cohen, and it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, as far as my opinion of Dan Cohen went. On page 70, another little article that concerning the Plymouth Police Department buying a narcotics test kit, another instance of purchasing and making small additions to the equipment of the Plymouth Police Department in order for them to do a better job. On page 71, there's this little article about me being elected second vice president of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association at its convention up in Duluth. This put me in line to become president of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association in a couple years. And it was something that I was flattered, and also felt a responsibility to do my share in the organization and to contribute what I could as second vice, and in the future as I went up the ladder. On page 71 and 72 are articles concerning who were in the running for police chief after Stenvig was elected mayor of the city of Minneapolis. Chief Dwyer succeeded me, and so he only had a short time as chief of police of Minneapolis for this period. And he wasn't in the running particularly because he and Stenvig, of course, had had their run-ins in the past when Stenvig was president of the Federation, and he was inspector of police and also as chief of police after I retired. On page 72, there is an article where I was interviewed by the Minneapolis Star reporter about being out in Plymouth, and I gave numerous interviews and short interviews over television where the interviewer was interested in why I would leave a department of 800 and some men and come out to a police department where we had 9 sworn and become chief out there. But I didn't tell them, but I was fed up with the politics and the hassles in Minneapolis, and I thought I would be a lot better off going out where I could help a young community, a young department, and it would be an interesting experience, and plus I'd be out of all the political hassles and battles in the city of Minneapolis. pages 74 and 75 continue with articles about different Plymouth Police Department programs. We started a bicycle rodeo, purchase of scales so that we could weigh trucks. Plymouth had a problem with during spring breakup, overweight trucks would drive on Plymouth streets and do considerable damage, and we were unable to prosecute because we didn't have scales to weigh the trucks. Prior to getting our own scales, we had to call the State Highway Patrol to assist us, or the Sheriff's Office, Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, to assist us in weighing, and this usually was a long delay, and wasn't a very efficient way of doing the job. On page 74, there's an article about a youth electrocuted at Wayzata High. I went out on this myself and helped investigate it. Apparently there was the people were going to do a burglary at Wayzata High School, and they entered through this kind of a shack or a shed on the top of the school building that contained electrical equipment, and they pried the door open, and they were dropping down into the room, and this boy who was electrocuted dropped right on top of high voltage wires in a switching station there, and he was immediately electrocuted. A very unfortunate accident, though he wouldn't have been there if he hadn't been committing the burglary, so it was his fault. On page 77, there's an article concerning my election as president of the Hennepin County Chiefs of Police Association. This is an organization of the Hennepin County Police Chiefs who met once a month and conducted various schools, training exercises, and coordinated between departments. And assisted one another in doing their jobs. Also on 77, there's a picture showing Wayzata High School students who collected money and groceries and purchased more groceries to donate to needy families in the city of Plymouth, and we were able to get a list of people from Hennepin County Welfare who were in need, and we delivered these groceries to these families at Christmas time. On page 78, there's a article and a funeral card or brochure from the funeral of Bill Mankey, a detective captain who worked with me, who died and his funeral was held on March 14th, 1970. He was a very efficient policeman and administrator, and was especially gifted in administration and did a good job in the Minneapolis Police Department and Detective Bureau as a detective captain in charge of the burglary division. On page 79, there is a letters, invitation, and my speech notes at a retirement luncheon that was held when Chief McAuliffe in St. Paul retired. Les McAuliffe and I traveled similar paths, he in St. Paul and I in Minneapolis. He was a homicide detective in St. Paul and I was one in Minneapolis. And we had attended International Chiefs of Police Association conventions together, and he and I had traveled to Boston to attend the a management school at the business school in Harvard University one summer. So we had gotten to know one another fairly well, and our wives got along fine together, and we had been out to dinner several times. When I was chief in Minneapolis, we'd go out to dinner, and usually we'd go over into Wisconsin and to get away from where we were known in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and have dinner at a nice restaurant over there, and talk and have an enjoyable, sociable evening. We also had talked together and had pledged each other that in the event of any serious civil disturbance or other emergency of any kind, we would gather up what on-duty and off-duty officers we had and come over and assist any time it was necessary or that he called us, or we called one another. Les was a kind of a hard guy to get to know. He was the kind of epitome of a rough, tough Irish cop, and he was a policeman's policeman, in my opinion, and a good investigator, good administrator, though he wanted to be in control of the situation, and he controlled and ruled the St. Paul Police Department with a probably what would be considered an iron fist. But I enjoyed my association with him for the time we were chiefs together and later on. Though in later years we gradually drifted apart when we retired, when I eventually retired permanently out of Plymouth, and of course he was retired from St. Paul. Chief McAuliffe, after he retired from St. Paul, worked for a number of years for Waldorf Paper over in St. Paul, and so he continued active in the police field, protection field, for a number of years after he retired from St. Paul. On page 81, in the upper left-hand corner, there is a handwritten letter from John Hoy. John Hoy was the informant who solved the T. Eugene Thompson case. In his letter, he was very flattering to me, and he has completely changed from when he was a safe burglar, hold-up man, drug user, what have you. Now he is married, of course, and worked been working all the time. I believe he was driving a Coca-Cola truck out in California where he lives. And he's got a four-year-old, I guess, just going on five, who will be starting school, and he is very worried about the drug situation out on the West Coast and makes some inquiries about that, and about he's worried about his own son, so he has changed completely. I always liked him, and he was a good informant. He helped me with several cases, but particularly the T. Eugene Thompson. He was the source that told me that Butler, Sharp, and Ingram were in the St. Paul jail, and they were the ones who knew a lot about the gun and about the T. Eugene Thompson case. And the day after a meeting was held over in St. Paul, during which Captain Barkley, head of the homicide division in St. Paul, requested help from State Crime Bureau, Hennepin County Sheriff, Ramsey County Sheriff, Minneapolis Police Department, and other organizations. I was able to call him and tell him to go into his own jail, where Butler, Sharp, and Ingram were presently residing on some other case, and question them about the Thompson case, and it would probably lead to something, and it did, and it eventually solved the case for St. Paul. John Hoy was in jail on a robbery charge. He and a couple others tried to rob a loan company that was on Hennepin Avenue between Oak Grove and Franklin Avenue, up in there on the west side of the street at that time in our city's history. And after he gave me all this information on the Thompson case, plus some other information concerning operations going down around town, I went to